Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Very good evening to you. John Dixon here, and very welcome to the Astronomy Show, where we bring you the latest news and discoveries from around the universe, right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm John Dixon, of course. Ben is still away just this week. He'll be back next week. And you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie or at www.astronomy.ie, or indeed as a podcast. And of course, very special welcome to those of you joining us on astronomy.fm across the other side of the Atlantic. And as usual, we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have, of course, of an astronomical nature. You can email us at astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, or you can text or WhatsApp. There's two things to the new technology for us. 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. So let's have a little browse around to see what's going on around in the skies at the moment. Fortunately, the International Space Station is not our friend just at the moment. It won't be back in our evening skies until September the 14th. And it'll be through until October the 3rd, so we're looking forward to that as always, and it's always nice to see the International Space Station. I do have a couple of times for you for later on as well. I think you get some early morning passes. You can just find my little note to self for me, and then we'll have a browse around the planets. Mercury is not visible in the dark sky from Ireland just at the moment, and despite it being at its greatest angular distance from the sun from August the 10th, experts will be able to track it down in broad daylight telescopes, so have to be really good with that to see Mercury. Venus, unfortunately not visible in a dark sky this month either. It passes between Earth and the sun, and it is below the sun as well, too. You're not really going to see it at all. Jupiter, it's a morning sky at the moment. Mid-month, it rises by midnight, so it's just appearing into the early hours at the moment. It's still a fine sight until dawn all month. And by the end of the month, Jupiter is rising at about 10 p.m. So just at the moment, it's rising at midnight, and at the end of the month, it'll rise about 10:30 p.m., which just shows you how quickly that the planets move across the solar system as well. So if you're a red spot fancier, you might have seen it this morning at 12:12 a.m., just after midnight. Tomorrow morning you can see it at 5:59 a.m., only for a short period of time, because it's quite a quick spinning planet, and it's nice to see the red spot if you have a pair of binoculars, or that's a good pair of binoculars, or indeed a telescope as well. Saturn, on the other hand, is at opposition on August the 27th, which is only a few days away now at this stage, meaning it will be visible all night from dusk until dawn, and highest in the south at local midnight, which is roughly 1:30 a.m. So keep an eye out for Saturn. So it's ideal. Saturn is ideal for viewing this month, as it'll be closest to the Earth and at its brightest as well. Mars, unfortunately, it's very, very, very faint at the moment, magnitude plus 1.8. You'd be very, very lucky to see it, so it's not really a planet that we want to go out and see. Uranus, plus 5.7. It's in our morning skies and rising around midnight as well, and highest at dawn. So if you've never seen Uranus and you want to, that's the time to see it. Neptune, on the other hand, plus 7.8, it's dimmer again. It's highest in the morning skies, rising about 10 p.m. mid-month. So it's a little bit, tiny bit earlier now at the moment, but highest in the south around 4 a.m. in the morning. So that's good if you want to see that as well. Still a few odd Perseid meteor showers around in the skies. I saw one or two over the last couple of nights. I know they're not as frequent as they were on August the 12th and 13th, but they will be around for another probably 2 days or so. And a good chance to see that. Now, sunrise and sunset. We'll go back to the space station. You'll get to see it for 5 minutes at 5.22 a.m. in the morning, which is not too bad. Be bright, but the space station is bright. And it's quite low in the skies, at 17 degrees. So you will see it 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, all the way through until the beginning of September. And then later on it'll appear in our evening skies from the 12th, the 14th of September until October the 3rd. Sunrise, it's getting darker, would you believe? It's losing a few minutes a day at the moment. Tomorrow morning, rising at 6.18 a.m. and setting again at 20.36, which is just after 25 to 9 tomorrow evening. We're losing round 3 minutes and 58 seconds at the moment and getting higher and higher. So at the end of the week, we'll be losing about just over 4 minutes at that stage. The moon around its moonrise and sunset. It rose this afternoon at 1300, which is just lunchtime, and it will set later on at 2220. And at the moment, it's 392,475 kilometres away from us. And tomorrow, just for example, it will only be 387,263 kilometres away from planet Earth as well. And it rises tomorrow at 14.21, which is about an hour later than today, which is just 20 past 2, and sets at 25 to 8 tomorrow evening. Just a little note, if you are interested in what's known as a starbecue, this is the annual Astronomy Ireland starbecue. It's on Saturday the 9th of September, and it's in Roundwood, County Wicklow. And you can email at admin@astronomy.ie, where you get to see Ireland's biggest telescopes under the dark skies of County Wicklow. I've been there loads of times. It's brilliant to see. There's catering, burgers and all that sort of stuff as well, with telescope viewings, tour of the night sky with David Moore and much, much more. A little wander around. So that's a good thing to put in your diary if you want to go down there. Starbecue 2023, that's Saturday the 9th of September in Roundwood, County Wicklow. And again, you can book at astronomy.ie/SBQ, which is well worth going to have a little wander about. Now, let's meet our SpaceX. Let's see what they've been doing. They're ready to go this Friday. NASA has declared the Crew 7 astronaut mission to go for launch. And it's been cleared as from yesterday for liftoff. So with a bit of luck now, everything will go very well for the launch of the SpaceX-NASA joint venture. And it'll be brilliant to see. So the 7 new astronauts will arrive with a cosmonaut, and they'll arrive in Florida ahead of the launch just probably tomorrow or the next day. And they hope to launch on Friday into Saturday. So we look forward to that. So we'll keep an eye and we'll give you an information thing on that as well. Just keeping with SpaceX for a moment. Just on Tuesday last August the 22nd, the SpaceX launched 21 satellites. So these are the Starlink satellites. And then they landed the rocket back at sea. So that was Eastern time earlier on today, so 5:37 a.m., which is remarkable to see this if you've never seen it. And it was a Falcon 9 rocket carrying the Starlink spacecraft lifted off from the Vandenberg Space Force base in California. And everything seems to have gone well there. So they had a bit of delay with all the Hurricane Hillary alerts and things like that. So everything is going well there, so we can keep an eye on that, see, make sure everything is A-OK. India's Chandrayaan 3 images, a few photographs on the far side of the moon. These are actually brilliant to see. We're not really familiar with the backside or the dark side of the moon, and the photographs were taken ahead of the landing, which would be brilliant to see as well. So it's tested out its photographic imaging capabilities. Again, The Dark Side of the Moon is something really, really interesting to see if you haven't seen photographs, and well worth a little Google on that as well. So that's something to look forward to. You're listening to The Astronomy Show right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here until 8.30 this evening. And I keep getting asked about books and what books we should buy. One is Eternal Life Left at Orion, and the one that's really easy to use is Exploring the Night Sky with Binoculars by Sir Patrick Moore. And in fact, my version of this particular one is just by Patrick Moore, and it's the fourth edition. I'm not sure if we've gone much further into that, but I'm sure this is a particular collector's item. It's one of these books that I'll probably never throw away because it has everything and it's timeless. So it tells you how to get through the evening skies in binoculars or with binoculars, and you can see the stars, you can see rings on Saturn, you can see the red spot on Jupiter. It gives you pictures of all the different constellations and all the different Messier objects you can see in that as well. It's quite an informative book as well, and well worth a little look. And it gives you photographs and things of the different stages of the moon phases, etc. as well. So, and then at the end it gives you a list of all the important stars, double stars, variable stars, and anything else that would be of interest, including clusters and nebulae. So that is certainly well worth a look as well. So now, the James Webb Telescope, as we know, took off a while ago, and it's been beaming back photographs, mesmerizing photographs, looking at the Ring Nebula, which is about 2,200 light years from where we're sitting. And it's one of these round things, like these Cheerio things you eat for breakfast, you know, these round things. It's remnants that form a structure famously known as the Ring Nebula. And as from yesterday, scientists announced that the James Webb Telescope has struck gold once again, earning a rather beautiful new view on this iconic cosmic halo. And I did catch a view of this on the internet earlier on, so you can go and catch that as well. Now, the Chandrayaan-3, it's successfully adjusted its orbit to 153 kilometres, as reported by the Indian Space Research Organisation. The precise manoeuvring, which is very important, is a pivotal step as the mission gears up for its anticipated soft landing on the Moon's south polar region tomorrow at some stage. So really, really looking forward to that. So let's hope everything goes there as well. So its primary mission is to demonstrate the capability of a successful soft landing on the Moon. Unlike its predecessor, Chandrayaan-2, this mission is solely equipped with a lander and a rover, foregoing an orbiter. So, yes, indeed, that's good news there. So, good news. So, and they hope, of course, to be the first nation to land on the South Pole of the Moon later this week. Now, a little bit of bad news for the Russians, unfortunately. The Lunar 25 probe has crashed into the moon, and Russia's first moon mission is almost 50 years. The Luna 25 probe has crashed on the moon's surface after an unspecified incident during the pre-landing maneuvers. The Russian space agency Roscosmos said just on Sunday. This is very unfortunate for the Russians there, because we're all fighting to see who can get their planet-worthy spacecraft onto the surface of the moon. And this particular crash comes almost a year and a half into the Russia-Ukraine's offensive. So its failed mission also comes as several companies and nations have entered a moon race. There we go. We have the Indians, we have the Chinese, the Japanese, the Americans, and a lot of this. So the communications with Luna 25 was lost at 11:57 GMT, that's our own time here, on Saturday last. And according to the preliminary findings, the lander has ceased to exist following a collision with the moon's surface. That's rather unfortunate. So measures taken on the 19th of August and 20th to load the craft and make it make contact with it were unsuccessful. So at this stage, we have to presume that it has disintegrated on the moon's surface. And of course, the crash landing as well is the latest twist in the international push to return to the Earth's natural satellite, which is, of course, our little moon So we just have to keep an eye on everything there to see what happens. And if you've been watching, as I have, the progress made by the Russia's Luna 25 probe during the week, and we got information through that the probe had entered Moon's orbit and everything is working okay, and then suddenly at the last minute they lost communications with it as well. So that's unfortunate for the Russians there. Now, NASA's Lunar Trailblazer satellite is ready to hunt for water on the Moon. This is one of the important things that we need to see if there is up there, whether they're going to use it for drinking or they're going to use it for making bricks, for making settlements up there. This is all part of the technology that's they're going to use as well. So Lunar Trailblazer joins a growing list of probes and landers heading towards the Moon's surface for the search for water ice. Now, they're normally just tucked inside the unsunlit craters or the North or the South Pole being one of the better areas to do the search for water ice. The Lockheed Martin-built Lunar Trailblazer is a fairly small little satellite, as satellites go, measuring just 3.5 metres wide, and it only weighs 222 kilograms, which launches no earlier than 2024, so that's something else to look forward to there. And it's yet to be determined what date that goes on as well. And at present, the satellite recently received the second of its two instruments, the Lunar Thermal Mapper, known as the LTM sensor, and that was built by the University of Oxford in England. And this LTM is designed to use infrared light to map the surface temperature of the Moon, as well as mapping variations in the minerals that make up the lunar surface. And they're fantastic to see. They're only the size of a washing machine, these things. It's a little solar panels and everything there. But there is a lot of stuff up there. I say a lot of stuff. There is a lot of stuff there in the space junk world, which is not particularly good. Now, just talking about Patrick Moore's book, Exploring the Night Sky with Binoculars. Did you know, and I didn't know up to recently, that Celestron have an Eclipse Smart 12 by 50 Poro solar binoculars, pair of binoculars that you can look directly at the sun. Now, this is fantastic because I haven't ventured to do this yet. You're talking maybe €130 to do this. Celestron Eclipse Smart 12 by 50 are specialists in the area of solar eclipse binoculars that offer wide and close-up views of sunspots. Now, let's keep an eye out. I might even venture to purchase something like this. I know Ben has a pair of binoculars and he has these little solar filters to go both over the binoculars and his telescope. But they say they're a little bit bulky, which we don't really mind. They require a little patience, practice and preparation. And at their best, of course, when attached to a tripod. Now, 12 by 50s are not too bad, too hard on the eyes. And they're a wise choice if you're after something serious that will last beyond the next eclipse. So there we go. Something for a few months' time. A little fella in a red suit might be able to help you on this. So it's the Celestron Eclipse Smart 12 by 50 Poro Solar Binoculars. They're pros, excellent close-up views with sunspots. It's affordable, yep, at €130 or thereabouts. And it has a tripod adapter jack. Its cons, that's the things that they don't really like about it well, as the binoculars are heavy and bulky. They have a narrow field of view, which I don't really mind that either, and some colour fringing, and I certainly don't mind a bit of colour fringing on to binoculars looking at the sun. So that's it. Put that down on the Santi list, and it gives you roughly a 12 times magnification of what you would normally see with your unaided eyes. So, and they look quite good as well, and they have things like eye strain relief and things like that as well. So put that on your list. Celestron Eclipsmart 12 by 50. Now, I can remember the day that the solar probe lifted off. If you were to ask me just quickly when I thought that was, I would have said 2 or 3 years ago. But in fact, it was August the 12th in 2018. I got an early morning text from Ben, of course, as we sort of text each other. And we watched the launch. And it's 5 years ago this week, the NASA Parker solar probe blasted off atop the powerful Delta IV rocket. from what is now Cape Canaveral's Space Force Station, and the pre-dawn launch into the skies over Florida coast. I know it was bright over here, but it was just still dark when it lifted off in Florida. And it marked the start of a game-changing mission to unlock the secrets of the solar wind and the culminations of decades of development to craft a robotic explorer able to withstand the heat and radiation near the sun like no other spacecraft before. It's now got pretty close to about 3 million miles, I believe, something like that. So the designs for the solar probe started in 1962. And I had a little fella running around in shorts in those days. So, and just 4 years after the National Research Council Space Studies Board first proposed a mission to explore the environment near the sun. So, again, it took a while to get this into the skies. There was no glitches at all. August the 12th, 2018. I would not have said that. I would have said only 2 or 3 years ago. So, that's weird how time marches on very quickly indeed, isn't it? Yeah, so there we go. Just check the text line just for a moment. No, nothing through just yet, which I'm sure at some stage somebody will send something through to me on 087-179-1032. Now you're listening to The Astronomy Show, 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here until 8.30. So keep it tuned our way. Now, there's a satellite out there that was also launched in August 2023. I beg your pardon, it was launched in October 25th in 2006. It came back to us 17 years later for the first time. And it's known as NASA's Stereo A spacecraft. And it passed between the sun and the Earth a couple of days back, marking the first Earth flyby of the nearly 17-year-old mission. And the visit home brings a special chance for the spacecraft to collaborate with NASA missions near Earth and reveal new insights into our closest stars. So the twin stereo spacecraft launched on, as I say, the October the 25th, 2006 from Cape Canaveral. And it went off and then suddenly came back. It decided to come back to say hello to us so they can download some information. There's lots of information you can Google on that as to exactly what it has done. Now, space mining has become very big, I suppose, with lots of people taking interest in landing on the moon and all of the moon projects as well. But there is a particular space mining company developing a nuclear reactor for more moon projects, and our small steps back to the moon today could build a new rich industry, which would be pretty good. There's lots of buzz about mining on the moon. Satellites have spotted water at the lunar South Pole, which I mentioned just earlier. It's a little bit more down there, although you do get them into the sun, the unsunlit craters as well, and even on the North Pole as well. So they're focusing on the South Pole as well. So that'll be interesting to see what that's. Now, these nuclear reactors probably won't be very big, but they're just enough to help power off, up all sorts of things as well. So there we go. Now, text line. Yep, you guys sound too young to have been aware of astronauts from the inception. There you go. Anyway, good evening, Alan. Thank you for tuning our way as usual. He's our regular encyclopedia, Alanica, as we call it as well. So there we go. So thanks for that. 087-179-1032. Now, there's a record-breaking failed star orbiting a stellar corpse, and it's 2,000 degrees hotter than the sun. And astronomers have discovered a failed star that can't sustain nuclear fusion in its core, but is 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2,000 degrees Celsius hotter than the sun, thanks to the proximity of the stellar companion. This is in an area, it's known as a brown dwarf at the moment. It sits about 1400 light years from Earth and orbits an entity called a white dwarf. And the white dwarfs, for definition, are cooling remnants of sun-like stars that ran out of fuel at the end of their stellar lives, so, and then become pulsars and all sorts of things like that. So it'll be very interesting to do a little bit more research, as it's only been recently discovered. Again, just sneaking back to last week's information about Russia's lunar moon lander, and it was telling me there that it reached lunar orbit during the week, And of course, unfortunately, it didn't do everything it said on the tin. So we'll just have to wait and see if there's anything back from that at all. Doesn't look like it, but there we go. So, and time rapidly marching on, and NASA is working to get private stations up and running before the ISS retires in 2030. Now, this is an interesting thing. And microgravity research and technology development on the ISS will continue full throttle through to the end of 2030, the agency says. With the International Space Station, they keep putting these forward, scheduled to retire in 2030. NASA is placing a huge emphasis on a seamless shift to future private space stations and low Earth orbit, and many details of that transmission are still being worked out just at the moment. There's a lot of interest in putting space stations up there as well, as a private enterprise. So it'll be very interesting. Brings us back to the word James Bond, and a film called Octopussy as well. So, and it had its own gravity system and everything. It was really fantastic. It just makes the mind boggle. So the reason this is so important is because we do believe that the impact of a gap will be disruptive. And I suppose when you think about it, that the ISS has lasted a little bit more and a little bit longer than it has. And what they'd probably do just is either replace a few bits and pieces here and there, rent it out, get people to replace bits and pieces, or just bring it back to Earth in a fiery fireball. So we just have to wait and see what happens. But that's still a good bit away, as we're still only in 2023. And more news about the James Webb Telescope. And it's spotted just recently a huge star that's about to go supernova. And it was just given us a gorgeous view. If you want to watch this on the internet as well. And this was going back actually till March, but we don't get the information out until, you know, a month or two, or maybe a few more months later, out into our world as well. So massive stars race through their life cycles, and this is a big one. So this is worth a little Google to see what exactly is happening there as well. Anyway, that is unfortunately about it for this evening. Thank you for listening our way. That email address for comments and questions is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks as ever due to James Sweeney for making it available as a podcast, and indeed to Conor Lennon for its availability on astronomy.ie. That's all from me, John Dixon, from this particular edition of The Astronomy Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, we have Hello China. 9 p.m. we have Threads with Bren Linnett. At 11 p.m. we have Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood. And an interesting program to listen to with all the world music involved there. Midnight After Hours, we have with Dave Barry, jazz, blues and soul until 2 a.m. also, if you're a night bird, well worth a listen there as well. So please join myself and Ben next week, same time, same bat channel, and we'll be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thanks for listening. Say good night, John, and a very good night, John. See you next week. Bye bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.